Welcome to the Signal to Noise podcast on ProSound Web, sponsored by Blue Microphones. I'm Keith Clark, editor of ProSound Web and Live Sound International, joined by my co-host Michael Lawrence, who's the technical editor of PSW and LSI, and he's an accomplished audio professional in his own right. Hey, Michael.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Thanks for listening.
We're joined this time by our guest, David Shearman, who's highly accomplished in the field of professional audio, to say the least. In fact, it would likely take the entirety of this podcast to list out his full resume and accomplishments. So we've included a link to that information on the podcast page. David's worked in pro audio since the early 1970s in a wide range of roles, including as a frequent contributor to Live Sound International, and he's still going strong in his current role as director, global concert and rental business for Bose Professional. David's also currently the president of the Audio Engineering Society. Welcome, David.
Well, thank you, Keith, and hello, Michael. Great to be here.
All righty, let's get things started with something very fun, interesting, and beneficial that's coming up. And that's the AES at NAMM program, which will be presented at the upcoming NAMM show in Anaheim in January. So maybe we can start out, David. What are some of the highlights of this year's program?
Wow, it's hard to even summarize it. We of course, have our baseline twin-track foundation of pro audio information and training and presentations for studio technology and the recording environment, and secondly, for live sound reinforcement that affects both portable and audio for the performing arts and fixed facilities. Layered on top of that, we've added several new academies, as we call the clustered group of topical sessions, the Digital Networking Academy, the Microphone Academy. So we're expanding the program at the same time as streamlining the presentation, the physical facility, and the calendar. So anybody who was with us in January 2018, which was our inaugural event, will be really pleased and I think very enthusiastic about the positive changes we've made for January 2019.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was looking over the program recently, and I noticed a focus this year on wireless systems, best practices, et cetera. And I think that is fantastic. I mean, that's a much-needed thing with everything going on, and that continues to go on with the RF spectrum. And I'm most familiar with here in the States, but you know, I know a lot of areas of the world have concerns and issues that can directly impact our business as far as wireless.
Oh, absolutely. The Wireless Academy includes direct input and technical specialists from several of our symposium supporters, such as Lectrosonics, Shure. We have a great group of people. Ike Zimbel is with us. Many of your listeners will know Ike as one of the hardest working and most knowledgeable field and application specialists working on special events that involve multi-channel wireless. So we're very much pleased to be able to present information in that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ike's, speaking of writers for Live Sound International and ProSound Web, Ike is another one of those fellows that we are so glad to have him write for us when he does have time. But as you noted, he's pretty darn busy pretty much all the time. So it's catch as catch can.
I'm seeing a trend here, Keith. Live Sound is such a great platform for contemporary information, and I'm always supportive of your efforts there.
Well, one of the things that you might enjoy in particular, once in a while, Ike will step back and write not about wireless, but about road stories from his days back in he got started in the early 80s. And I know you were obviously around at that time and know how things were. So I'll send along a few links to his stories. Some of them are quite humorous, and I think you'll find them especially so since you were also there back in the day.
Oh, love to. And I know many of your listeners would appreciate knowing how to read some of that. Yeah, they're habitually called war stories, and I think that's for a reason. Anybody who accepts the responsibility of deploying a high-performance top dollar performance audio system and has an audience and the talent and the event management all breathing down your neck, you understand it is like being in the trenches, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and things were far different. Something I wanted to talk to you about later, but maybe we can segue to it here for a couple of minutes is, what do you think, what are the biggest changes you've seen that you've noticed over the past four or so decades? Because I haven't been around that long, but it's been long enough. But I would imagine, you know, you, and especially given all of the various roles that you've had over the years, you know, you probably, you know, maybe can encapsulate a bit for us how things are changed, at least in your view.
Oh, goodness. Well, if you go back, you say four decades, and that's about 40 years. That takes us back into the middle 1970s. And in the early 1970s, when I first began trying to get my first job and asking around, showing up unannounced at rental company shops and doing my best to break into the business, successful touring sound reinforcement companies were probably hand-building their own electronic crossovers. Some even built their own amplifiers. If you look at some of the pioneer companies, Heil Sound, United Sound in Burbank, what became Shoko in Texas in the late 1960s, the Clare Brothers organization, which emerged. It was an interesting hybrid blend of broadcast engineering parts, ex-military electronic technicians, surplus electronic items, emerging entrepreneurial companies trying to build a better mousetrap in each category, whether it was mixers or amplifiers or signal processing. So it was a fascinating time. The other thing I think we can clearly see, the deliverable of the mix, the event, the program, the talent on the performance stage, it takes a sound reinforcement system to reach the audience. And probably you could say three or four, you know, one, two, three punches. In the early 1970s, when Clare developed and deployed the S4 enclosure, which brought all of the low, mid, and high frequency components into a single enclosure. If you wanted a bigger system, you just added more boxes. That was a fundamental change. In the 1980s, when factory-built PAs began to become credible, the TurboSound TMS3, the EAW KF850, the Meyer MSL3 all emerged within a few years of each other. The shift finally to credible self-powered loudspeaker systems, the Meyer MSL4 in the middle or the early 1990s probably was the first commercially available concert quality high output powered system. And of course, around the same time, the shift to the line source array with L-Acoustics and the realization that there was a need to improve directivity control of a loudspeaker array and to minimize the interference patterns from multiple speakers. So each one of those things has helped bring us to where we are today on the speaker front.
So, okay, well, maybe we should get back just to business for a couple more minutes here. Now, to you, you know, outside of quote-unquote education, what are the biggest benefits that attendees can realize by a program like AES at NAMM? I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but something that comes to my mind right away would be networking, that there's a lot to be gained informally and sometimes formally, but, you know, just by being around an environment like that.
Anyone who makes their living as a sound reinforcement professional knows how hard it is to commit in advance to a particular date. If you have a gig come up, you're going to go work. So it's hard to think about buying a ticket or getting a plane flight in a hotel setup months in advance. That being said, key trade shows such as the Audio Engineering Society Convention, the NAMM Show, NAB, NAB New York, ProLight and Sound, Infocom. Once these become regular fixtures on the calendar, I know I'm not alone. As I grew up in my career, I'm not alone in realizing the power and the value of getting together with like-minded people who share the same interests and skills and want to learn from colleagues. And that is what AES at NAMM is all about. We've essentially taken the power and the, let's call it the technical intelligence of an AES technical session program and merged that with a much larger pool of on-site attendees. The NAMM show draws well over 100,000 people over 4 days. It's not open to the public, so it's an exclusive entry. Oftentimes passes are available through the equipment manufacturers. So AES at NAMM is an education and training symposium that is embedded in a commercial trade show, which is NAMM, which is increasingly attracting many professional audio equipment manufacturers. So we're seeing good synergy. It's been great fun. Just our first time out of the gate was January 2018. See many of the touring people find January a really good time to come out and network, rub elbows, talk to equipment developers and product engineers who are there to accompany many of the industry's leading pro audio brands. So what we've tried to do is create that environment, a place where the professional audio enthusiast, entry level or career professional or semi-retired can meet with and mingle with their peers and their colleagues in a focused environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been quite impressed with the job that NAMM has done with this initiative and others in terms of opening up to the professional audio market. I know last year, in addition to the kickoff at with the inaugural AES at NAMM, there was a brand new exhibit hall right up front there and at the convention center that was dedicated and is dedicated to professional audio gear and related businesses. And that was really something to see and really, well, I felt well worth my time and every attendee I talked to as well, largely a pro audio crowd. They were quite optimistic coming out of that on the direction that NAMM's going.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it was interesting to me to see the first use of that new hall that you're referring to. It's called ACC North, Anaheim Convention Center North Hall. Yes, it's completely devoted to production technology and event support equipment, not just audio, but also starting to bring in some of the staging and display and lighting exhibitors as well. So the Audio Engineering Society and our Board of Governors, our corporate leadership recognize the value of gatherings of audio professionals, and this is one that's emerging. You have to remember, it's only been about 2 years now that the society has began a formal program of membership outreach. And you mentioned the ACC North Hall. We'll have an AES membership drive booth right there in the main front lobby by the front door, as we did last year at NAMM and the year before. We had a membership drive going on at Summer NAMM, a membership drive booth at the NAB New York show. We just had a couple, in fact, in China, including the loudspeaker sourcing show and at Palm, Pro Audio Light and Music in Beijing. So we're seeing great value in engaging face-to-face interaction with people who want to get together. I think we all love online technologies and media channels and digital platforms, but nothing beats getting together with your peers and making new friends in person, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you can catch us up here on, now you mentioned the membership initiative. What are some other initiatives, recent ones undertaken by AES that that perhaps you've been involved with or that you're excited about?
Oh, sure. love to talk about some of what the Audio Engineering Society has been up to. We've had a tremendously innovative and dedicated Board of Governors this year during my term as president. Our global membership, I think the metrics I looked at earlier this year, we were up about 8% year on year. The audio industry itself is thriving. You have a lot of growth on the product development side. So we've been strengthening our product development content at the AES convention, led by Scott Leslie, who very, very innovative engineer, who's served time with JBL and with Rinkus Hines and with Ashley. So Scott and his team have been drawing some of that content in. The international conferences that we've been doing, we've worked methodically the past couple of years to both make them more diverse, like audio for games, audio technology for the automotive industry, forensic audio. Who would have thought that you could go to an AES convention, or I'm sorry, who would have thought that you could go to an AES international conference near Washington, D.C., and actually have AES members from the FBI and the CIA and the National Security Agency show up to attend our forensic audio conference, or the conference this past year at the Library of Congress on audio archiving and restoration, where many of the wax cylinder recording processes are preserved, and the ability to translate from one historical recording medium to the next and see the results over time. Those type of things is why the Audio Engineering Society exists, to bring people together in honor of all the different unique fields. And as we watch audio grow, as we watch companies like Netflix, Amazon, Microsoft, YouTube, all hire audio engineers, all have new acoustical laboratories and product development programs. We had a wonderful conference in Seattle this year. Audio for Virtual and Augmented Reality, AVAR. Our sponsors included the DigiPen Institute, which is linked to Nintendo. So the biggest thing you could say about what is AES up to, we're doing our very best to support the student community, to expose the entry-level career professionals to all of the expanding opportunities in industry, and a recognition that the audio industry is not constricting or imploding like the sky was falling attitude from 15 or 20 years ago because of the shift in the major recording studio and record label supported industry. Audio didn't go away, it just changed. And so the challenge as president of a membership-based organization like AES is to help recognize those changes in industry and use all of our processes and our tools and resources available to help connect different people with each other.
So, David, if I could just dovetail that with what you were saying earlier, which is, you know, hey, you know, when you started this whole thing, if you wanted a crossover, you had to build a crossover. If you wanted a nice parametric EQ, you had to build it. That's sort of shifted so far that now we can buy whatever we need off the shelf, and you don't need to know how it works under the hood to use it. And there are a lot of brilliant engineers that use these tools every day and would have no idea how they worked and couldn't look at the schematic and tell you anything about it. And I sort of feel like that aspect of it has really been lost, the sort of under the hood tinkering aspect, where let's really get into the nitty gritty of the circuit design. And not because everyone needs to go out and build their own gear, but because I really enjoy the engineering aspects of that and the, you know, let's really understand these tools at the deepest level. And so I try to invest as much of my time in that type of thing as I can. And so, you know, seeing that you've kind of had you've seen a larger arc of that than I have, you know, do you agree with that? And if so, what role do you see, you know, AES playing in, you know, keeping those parts of the art relevant?
You know, that's a great question. And the AES at NAMM symposium, to be very specific, we have tracks and a calendar of sessions that include many of those fundamentals presented by the people who have helped create the technology platforms. For example, Jamie Anderson with Rational Acoustics. It's not, most of us know what SMART is as a measurement and analysis tool, but it takes being with the being close to the source and having a personable, intimate chance to bounce these ideas back and forth, to understand how the tool or the product or the platform evolved. Bruce Olson, who's such an expert in many of the more technical, fundamental technical aspects of sound reinforcement from an engineering point of view, and Bruce happens to be the standards chair for the Audio Engineering Society. Charlie Hughes of Excelsior Audio. Access to these people in a one-on-one setting and the sessions on the calendar that they're bringing to the table at this AES at NAMM event, that's really right in alignment with what you're saying. You can't tinker with something under the hood if you don't understand the fundamental principles. And the automobile analogy is a great one. I really liked that. The shade tree mechanic or the person, the driver who realized he or she had a clogged fuel filter and knew how to change it. And with audio systems today, I share your concern. Many entry-level people and especially graduates of theoretical programs or classes, training platforms that are mostly focused on theory and the what you see on your computer screen sort of thing. If you don't understand what is a ground loop, what is the signal path, how do you properly adjust the gain stages in any system, whether it's in the studio or with a concert PA or in a fixed multi-channel reinforcement installation in a performance venue, that ethic, that understanding, that awareness is part of what led to the creation of the AES at NAMM program.
And I think, you know, for me personally, what you're talking about, the value of getting direct to the source, so to speak. You know, I'm a system tech. I use SMART every day. And so, you know, I would like to think that I'm fluent at using that tool. But, you know, recently I was able to go hang out with Jamie and sit through his training class and talk to him a little bit about the software. And, you know, of course, you know, that brings so much perspective in terms of what their design goals are and how the program got to where it is. And I really feel like I understand it at a deeper level. Just through having those conversations and talking to the people that are behind these tools. And so there's a huge value in that. So I would absolutely say that anyone that has those types of interests should really pursue that because, you know, I can tell you firsthand that it's very, very valuable experience.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for reinforcing that idea. I tend to resonate with a lot of what you're saying, and I think back to being a younger person trying to find the right ways, the right tools, discovering synergetic audio concepts, SynodCon, for the first time. And I was in the second class that Don and Carolyn Davis ever held back in 1974. So the same year that Claire was putting the S4 system out on the road for a Beach Boys and Chicago co-headlining arena tour for the first time. You had SynodCon emerging to help teach basic fundamental electroacoustical principles to mostly, at that time, it was contractors and consulting offices. And so for me, it's been great fun over the years to watch the two worlds, the two communities, let's call it public address and music reinforcement, start to find common ground. But what's underneath it all is audio engineering, basic principles that they don't change. The laws of physics don't change, but the applications and the practice and how we work with those fundamental principles, those evolve over time.
Well, very good. Well, I think we're just about out of time. So I would like to encourage everyone to check out the podcast page. We will have links to a lot more info about AES at NAMM, a lot more information about AES as well. Also, registration for AES at NAMM. We'll put a direct link there. And as I mentioned at the outset, we'll also have a link that will tell you a whole lot more about David and his career. So, David, thank you so very much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. It's been a lot of fun and glad to help. Glad to participate.
All righty. Well, hey, we'll see you in January.